Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show whenever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your next order. On Friday, Miami played the last of eight seeding games, but without Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala, and Goran Dragic, who were all presumably available but resting before the start of the playoffs next week. I'll talk about what we've learned so far in the Orlando bubble, how Miami is positioned for the playoffs, as well as a brief recap of the game itself. Miami was fielding a starting lineup of Kendrick Nunn back from quarantine after having left the bubble briefly last week, as well as Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Kelly Olynyk, and the captain himself, 40-year-old Udonis Haslem. The Heat dropped a 109-92 loss to the Indiana Pacers, who happen to be Miami's upcoming opponent in the playoffs. The Heat have faced the Pacers twice this week before facing them at least four times over the next week and a half or so. Here's what today's loss means. Miami drops to 3-5 in the eight seeding games overall. Not ideal, but they weren't really playing for anything. There's no home court advantage. There's no real positioning for seeding. You have the 76ers that have gone through a number of injuries, and so maybe they're a better opponent than Miami is, theoretically, but Joel Embiid is still incredibly talented, and you wonder whether or not he might be able to shift the game in his favor. He's still a difficult matchup, although Miami has done a pretty good job of being able to limit him in several games this season. You also want to try to avoid Milwaukee in the second round, which Miami cannot do now if they're able to advance past the Pacers. But the Celtics were just too good to catch up, even though Miami was able to beat them on occasion. They weren't going to catch up to the Raptors, who had a very dominant seeding games during the bubble. So might as well just enjoy what you have. And again, from Miami's perspective, and I've mentioned this several times during the podcast, they don't care about their opponent. I think as Milwaukee represents the toughest challenge, although you can make a strong case for the Raptors and maybe even the Celtics given their depth, if Kemba Walker is healthy and available to play. As far as, you know, the earlier rounds, either Philadelphia or Indiana, those didn't matter to Miami. I think Indiana is a tough team. They have some potential there, although they're missing some key players. Something I'll talk about a little bit in the next segment and over the next couple days as I preview the playoffs. But overall, the seeding didn't matter as much as we might have thought it did. You know, you want to kind of position yourself. You want to face, look, in the Western Conference, perhaps it's a little bit more difficult. There are matchups there that certain teams are trying to avoid. I think Denver was certainly trying to position themselves in a certain way to avoid a particular opponent. They recognize that they have some gaps there. Miami doesn't see themselves as having any particular gaps. They can defend big. They can mostly defend small, especially with their versatile starting lineup and the changes that they've made. Overall, I just don't think that they are very concerned with their opponents so much as making sure that they play their style of basketball. The loss puts Miami in the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference playoff race. So again, it was either going to be the fourth seed or the fifth seed following the outcome of Friday's game. They wound up falling to fifth, I guess, theoretically, with Indiana taking the fourth seed. No home court advantage, doesn't really matter. I guess you'll have Indiana-based scoreboards and video boards in the surrounding areas around the bubble itself, but that really doesn't matter to the players. To Miami specifically, it doesn't have any kind of concern whatsoever. The team also locked in the 20th overall pick in the upcoming draft, whenever that might be. There's a set date, obviously, but without the proper level of evaluation, without a full collegiate year for some of these one-and-done type players, there's not a lot of information. I don't think there's going to be any kind of camps or combines for players, or the Chicago Combine, that's always a big place for NBA rookies to kind of position themselves, probably won't be happening just because of the difficulty in making sure that players are quarantined and things of that sort. So you've got a very limited amount of information. You might be able to bring in players for a scouting trip. I don't know. We don't have any kind of set rules on that. And of course, there is no information about upcoming season anyway. So it doesn't really matter. I typically don't put a lot of stock in the draft anyway. Following Miami for as long as I have, you don't really care too much about the draft. It's always great to pick up a player here and there, one that might have some value in the long run, but it's hard to determine that based on, again, a few games during their rookie season or their freshman year in college. Perhaps maybe they've played in a year or two. Maybe they've played internationally. I've seen some players from overseas that might be on Miami's radar, but again, I'm not too concerned with the drafts just because of the incredible lack of information that we have about the draft, about the players themselves, and about any future seasons. But most of all, the loss really didn't mean anything. From Miami's perspective, they didn't seem to care. If they had, they would have fielded Butler or Jay Crowder, who had bounced back from injury that he incurred against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But, you know, they were just trying to get an understanding, a sense of rhythm. It was impossible to do so, given everything that had happened over the last eight games. So they weren't really putting a lot of stock in a loss or a win over Indiana. It was just something on the schedule they had to go through. That's why they sat everybody out. And it's a good opportunity to get guys like Chris Silva, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Hero, and Kendrick Nunn some more playing time, because they all certainly need it. The big story, unfortunately, was the injury to Derrick Jones Jr. late in the third quarter. DJ curled around a screen set by Pacers rookie Goga Pitaze, who put an inadvertent elbow into the left side of Derrick's neck. DJ immediately crumpled face down to the ground and was seen to by Heat trainer Jay Sobel as well as others. Derrick could move his legs and arms, but could not or was not allowed to turn around. He remained there for several minutes in what was a really somber scene. I don't want to downplay it in any way, and I hope that you, if you didn't catch the game, that you at least understand the magnitude of it, because it was very eerie and somber, as I said before. Very, very quiet, given that it's the bubble, that you don't have a lot of crowd noise, there's no music, there's no halftime entertainment, nobody trying to rally up a crowd or anything like that. You're basically just sitting there in a very quiet arena with about 50 to 60 players, people, staff, etc., watching as Derrick goes through this injury, and you don't know what to do. You know, even Eric Reed and John Crotty, you know, they weren't really speaking much. They were kind of interjecting some things intermittently as you're watching the replay of the injury over and over. But there's not much that you can do or say without being in the bubble itself and understanding what's going on. Eventually, DJ was put on a stretcher and he was taken off the court. You know, Heat broadcasters were talking to the crowd or any kind of viewers as teammates surrounded DJ. But eventually he was carted off the court and he immediately underwent some testing there, presumably in the HP Pavilion where the game was taking place. The game mattered even less after the injury and was basically just played out of necessity. So you had the fourth quarter there, but again, playing time for the 10th, 11th, 12th guy, 15th guy on the bench, Udonis Haslam. As much as I love him and love seeing him get some playing time, he has only played in three games all season. It wasn't like he's going to get any kind of regular run during the playoffs, unfortunately. And so it was nice to see him out there, but it was really just an opportunity for some guys to get some playing time. Around 8:30 p.m. on Friday, I should mention, the team put out a statement that reads as follows. After an MRI, CT scan, and concussion test, the Heat announced that Jones Jr. has suffered a neck strain. The injury occurred with about 1:05 remaining in the third quarter of today's game against the Pacers on an Indiana offensive foul when Derrick collided with Goga Pitaze. Jones Jr. will be reevaluated again over the weekend. So this is probably the best case scenario for Derrick, because it means that he'll likely be available during the series against the Pacers. A neck strain, certainly a much better diagnosis than any kind of, paralysis or something along those lines. You never want to consider that possibility, but so at least Derrick seems like it's just a sore neck or neck strain, as they're calling it, and hopefully he'll be available. I would not expect him there in game one, just for the sake of precaution. A lot of the reaction afterwards was questioning why Derrick was out there on the floor. Somebody had to be with so many players out. Derrick's minutes have been up and down, and he needed to build a little rhythm before the playoffs. I'm sure he was happy to get the playing time, even if it was just against scrubs on Indiana's side. I mean, I hate to call them scrubs. Just, again, guys deep on the bench, not regular parts of the rotation, especially with the playoffs looming. And it was totally unpredictable. It could have happened to anyone. So I'll have some takeaways of the game and what we know about the Heat moving forward in the playoffs. I'll break that down later on the show, but one thing for certain is that Built Bar is back and better than ever. Look, I've told you before, I love Built Bar. They're delicious. It's so easy to grab a snack when you're on the run. I've got a toddler. I've got this job. I've got so much on my plate, me and my family. Sometimes it's hard to just focus on building, putting together a meal of any kind. And so Built Bar is great as a snack because it's so easy to go. You don't have to cook, no fuss, no cleanup afterwards. And it's so great. Not only does it taste good, but it's good for you too. So many good nutrients available in one simple package. And the new improved Built Bar is even more deliciouser. 18 amazing flavors and 6 new flavors, including caramel brownie, cookies and cream, which I cannot wait to try. Lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, almond apple crisp. I mean, those are just fantastic, along with their original 12 flavors of German chocolate, peanut butter, banana bread, which is my personal favorite, and mint brownie, which I am not a fan of, but my wife loves. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to choose. They don't taste like a protein bar, although they are healthy and good for you too. They're great for the health-conscious person, or if you wanted to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for all sorts of keto diets. You can order Built Bar with a promo code specifically for this new relaunch, and you can get a free cooler with purchase. Look, supplies are limited. They'll only last for about a week or so, but you can get a free cooler with purchase if you go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. I'll have several episodes previewing the playoffs with different media members from around the NBA, as well as recaps after each game, and an upcoming episode with sharpshooter Duncan Robinson straight from the Orlando bubble that you don't want to miss. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Some additional takeaways from the game. Udonis Haslem starting what could be the last regular season game of his career. Kind of sucks to say that out loud, but the reality is that we don't know what to expect of Udonis. This has been such a strange season for... Look, we don't know if next season is going to be played or when it's going to be played. It's all up in the air. The chances of Udonis returning are very unlikely. We saw what happened with Vince Carter, whose, you know, last season got cut short after a, you know, a mid-March hiatus began, and so he couldn't play out the last month and a half, couldn't get the last dance the same way Dwayne Wade did, and that's very difficult for aging players, something that I've talked about quite a bit, and Udonis has to make a decision. If he wants to come back, the team will make space for him. I believe that wholeheartedly. I don't think he's ready to retire 100%. I think he enjoys this way too much, so we'll see what happens. He could just as easily move onto the sunset there, but I just see him being invested in this, and I wonder if he's ready to step away 100%. But either way, for him to get a start was nice. He knocked down a three-pointer, had some nice plays, a diving layup at the basket. He can still do things. He can still play. He hasn't put a lot of wear and tear on his knees over the last couple of years because he just hasn't played as much, despite the fact that he's 40 years old. And I still think he's somewhat valuable there. I know a lot of you might argue, well, why not give that spot, that roster spot, to a younger player? I could see that argument being made, but you never know. Again, a lot of these guys don't really get much playing time anyway, whether they're young or not. And I think the value of Udonis Haslem is something that any young player can't reproduce. So Duncan's stretch of 47 straight games with at least one three-pointer came to an end on Friday. He went 0-for-3 from long range. He did start the game, did not play in the second half. Didn't really play much at all. Again, not really a risk that you didn't want to take a risk as far as his injury is concerned. He only played 13 minutes, went 0-for-3 from three-point range. Didn't really do much, have much of an impact. He wasn't looking to get his shot. It's unfortunate to see his streak come to an end. Bam Adebayo's consecutive games played streak also came to an end after the game. I think Eric Spoelstra mentioned that he had considered giving Bam some playing time, but didn't really go through with it. He just didn't want to risk any kind of injury to Adebayo, who's still kind of rounding into shape after having contracted the Corona 19 virus. So I think it's the right decision. It's unfortunate for both Bam and Duncan, but you know, streaks are going to be built again, and hopefully Duncan can continue to knock those down for the Heat for a long stretch, not just during the playoffs, but in next regular season, whenever that might be. I got a question from Steve Kolakidis, who asks, what about KZ Okpala? Is there any reason that KZ doesn't get any minutes, even in a game like this? Steve, I got to tell you, we've been in the dark about it the whole time. At first, I think a lot of people expected Okpala to have a big impact in the bubble. It just seemed like a good situation for him after he had gone through so much work during the offseason, during the hiatus, and with the G League. We had heard that he's been putting in the work, that he was being evaluated and had done a really good job of being a versatile type, you know, scorer, defender. And I think you start to kind of wish that potential comes true or becomes realized somehow. But he also was dealing with some kind of nagging injury. And I don't think he was ever going to be ready. I think as much as we wanted to believe, or a lot of you might have wanted to believe, that Okpala was ready for this situation, I don't think Eric Spoelstra trusts him 100%. You know, even given what the point guard situation is, Tyler Herro might be the better choice to start, but I think Eric Spoelstra is going to continue to go to Goran Dragic as a team starter. So I think he just isn't 100%, isn't ready to trust a young player like Okpala. He's already tightened his rotation. I think a guy like a veteran like Myers Leonard, who I think Spoelstra likes on a personal level, and he loves his work ethic and his commitment and everything else like that. His willingness to adopt the Heat culture, and you look at what's happened with Myers playing time. I think Spoelstra has made some tough decisions in the bubble, and I think one of those includes not playing Ekpala. So unfortunately, I just don't think that there's anything else to do. I wouldn't expect him getting any kind of significant playing time at any point during the playoffs, however long that lasts for Miami. But what do we know about this team given what we've seen during the 8 regular season games? It's been hard to kind of get any concrete sense of where the team is based on those games, because we've seen good and bad, and there have been players that have been injured. It's been hard to kind of get any kind of consistency. They had a good game against Milwaukee, and then they blew a big lead. But I think if you look at what they were like before the hiatus began in mid-March, their issues with defense, to me, appear to be mostly over. I don't have the statistics to back that up because, again, I don't even care what the statistics might show, because it's been very difficult to ascertain anything, any kind of consistent statistic based on the ever-changing rotations and lineups. Jimmy Butler, your team's best defender, arguably, missed 3 games, missed 4 games if you count a fourth game against the last game, rather, against the Pacers. So it's very difficult to determine what's been working or what hasn't worked or what will work. And I think that's the big question here. I would have to say that I think they've tightened things considerably, and a lot of that has to do with the changes to the starting lineup. Inserting Jay Crowder there has been a brilliant move by Eric Spoelstra, one that's probably going to go under the radar just because, well, it's Eric Spoelstra. It's not as revolutionary as maybe starting Bol Bol in Denver or something like that, although he's not the starter in Denver. But I think Crowder has just been a really good fit in that starting lineup, being so versatile, a guy who stretches the floor so well, and I think it's been a great, great fit, probably better than expected there. I think Spoelstra has kind of downplayed it a little bit, saying we were taking this time to evaluate what Jay could do. They've always been very confident in his ability to be a contributor. But to make a sudden change of taking Myers out, who I thought would go into the bubble as the team's de facto starter, and for him to not get any kind of significant playing time was really startling. I think it just speaks volumes about how much they trust Jay Crowder and his ability to stretch the floor and defend multiple positions, and he's done a great job there. Jimmy, however, remains the glue to the team's defense, and he's been phenomenal. Before the 3 games that he missed for whatever ankle injury he may have sustained against the Toronto Raptors, he was actually just really, really good. I think he's just been a phenomenal player. He seems energetic. He seems healthy. He's been a great glue guy on and off the court, and I think his impact is going to be huge. I'm very, very curious to see whether or not he can single-handedly win a game for Miami. I'm a little disappointed or concerned about his shooting just because he seems more reluctant than ever before. But he's been very, very good overall. I think he can still continue to get to the line at a high level. And as long as he can do that, that's all that matters. He's going to get his points at the rim. His mid-range game is still pretty strong overall, I'd say. And I think he'll be a little bit more relaxed shooting from the perimeter. At least maybe that's my optimistic view of what can happen. Goran, again, will continue starting, and I think that's the right move because we've seen what he can do as a playmaker. He does create opportunities for others. He can stretch the floor. I think he's a little bit more polished. I think he's a little bit more experienced. You don't want to necessarily put all that pressure on Tyler to be inserted in the starting lineup and have to produce and playmake and do so many other things, defend, etc. With Goran, he's just more able to accept the challenge right now. And for Spoelstra, again, he trusts Dragic implicitly. So I think that's a huge thing. Myers, unfortunately, is probably out of the rotation. So while Goran's starting, Tyler is probably coming off the bench. Myers is probably not going to get much playing time. Jay is healthy following his knee-to-knee injury. The team lives and dies by the 3. I think that's good because they've got so many great shooters, but it's also bad because they need Crowder to continue being a flamethrower from the perimeter. Duncan could be targeted. Kelly and Goran have, on occasion, missed tons of shots from the perimeter. They could just as easily go 3 of 5 as they could 0 for 4. And Tyler is still a rookie. You can't count on them. Jimmy won't shoot them. Bam can't shoot them. So given all that, as much as they've relied on the three-pointer and as much as it's worked for them, it's a dangerous thing to have to live on that, to depend so completely on that sort of offense. You still need a guy like Jimmy to occasionally slow the game down, get to the line when he wants to. And that's still probably his greatest strength and something that Miami can consistently count on, especially when the whistles start to pick up during the playoffs. As far as the Pacers are concerned, and again, I'll get into this more when I really start previewing the playoffs over the next few days, they're still banged up. Domas Sabonis is still out, probably will continue being out or not at 100%. Speaking of not at 100%, Victor Oladipo certainly isn't. His commitment to the team has been questioned, which is a little weird. I wonder how much of that is real or not. He just hasn't been as fully energized and engaged as you might expect, and a lot of that has to do with him just kind of slowly working his back, considering the amount of time that he's missed. It's 100% understandable. TJ Warren apparently has been nursing a plantar fascia injury, so has it really stopped him from being a high scorer in the bubble? I wonder if Jimmy and Miami's defense can continue to pressure him the way they did in that first matchup earlier in the week when they limited Warren to just 12 points. To me, I look at Malcolm Brogdon as the team's X factor just because he's so good offensively, he's so big, and does create problems as far as the defensive matchup is concerned. I don't know who starts guarding him, whether it's Goron or somebody else. And while he wasn't the factor a lot of people would expect of him in that first game against the Pacers, you never know. You never want to count on that, especially if Oladipo gets hot or Warren somehow discovers his range a little bit against Miami. You don't want another guy stepping up and having a big game, and Malcolm seems like the guy most likely to do it. Thinking in bigger terms about the matchup, I was kind of wondering whether or not a loss to the Pacers would represent a failure of the season for Miami. Maybe that's a topic that I'll save for the next segment. This is just a taste of what to expect in upcoming episodes previewing the Pacers, the playoff series versus the Indiana. But one player who I want to talk about a little later who has struggled most during the Orlando bubble is Kendrick Nunn. I'll talk about his role in the next segment and why we shouldn't expect much from the rookie of the year candidate moving forward. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So to wrap up, I was talking a little bit about the Pacers matchup and what it represents as far as Miami and the season. I know this is somewhat of a bigger picture question here, but my feeling is, you know, some people kind of look at Miami's chances in the playoffs and rightfully so expect this team to be able to go on a deep playoff run. Assuming they get past the Pacers, they could challenge Milwaukee, and if that's the case, they could find themselves in an Eastern Conference Finals berth against the Raptors or the Celtics, who seem likely to advance a little bit deeper. So that would probably be the matchup for Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals if they were able to somehow get past both Milwaukee and Indiana. But even if they were to lose to the Pacers, I don't know that I see it as a failure of a season for Miami, and that's where we're kind of standing at right now. A lot of people just are dismissing the Pacers because they're banged up a little bit, because they're the Pacers, because Miami's always had their numbers. I don't know if we should necessarily blow them off as an opponent, because I still think that they're somewhat dangerous, especially if Warren can be healthy and can have a big game against Miami. As far as Miami is concerned, however, it shouldn't be viewed as a failure if somehow they don't get past the Pacers. They've exceeded all sorts of expectations for this season. I don't think you have to be a Sixers fan to have had a realistic feeling about what this team was going to be like and know that maybe it wouldn't have worked just because of the Jimmy Butler factor, just because you didn't know what to expect out of Deion Waiters and James Johnson early in the season, that you were counting on Justice Winslow, that Goran Dragic was a little bit early, a little bit later in his career. So many different factors moving forward as the season began. Again, it's been almost a year now. We're talking about after training. Training camp has already, or not started a year ago, but it was right before the start of training camp. Free agency had just come to a close. You had traded Hassan Whiteside. Everything else had happened. And you weren't really sure what to make of this team. A lot of people, including, you know, notably some Sixers fans, thought that they might not even make the playoffs. I don't think you had to be even a media member. Some media probably thought that Miami didn't have a strong chance of advancing in the playoffs. I always thought that they would be able to be at least a top four seed in the East. And they certainly did that, although they wound up being fifth. For some technicality there because of the bubble and, you know, everything else that happened following the hiatus in the season. But to me, again, they've delivered expectations. Jimmy has absolutely delivered on everything that we could have expected from a leader, a player, and everything else. And he's been in that locker room, on the floor and off of it. Several players have taken huge leap from Bam Adebayo to Duncan Robinson becoming one of the best shooters in NBA history. Tyler, I think, has really exceeded expectations as well as a scorer and a guy with potential. Well, whether or not he's with a team long term, if he's packaging a deal to acquire another established superstar, I know that's the talk or the buzz around Heat Twitter. But he's been great this season. You've been able to have a lot of fun moments watching him pull back that dribble and shoot it over opponents. And he's been really fun to watch. And I think he's a guy with a big future ahead of him. I talked to a guy who's been training him here and during the not just the off season, but since he was drafted by Miami, and he's had a really great success working with Tyler. And he told me that he sees Tyler as a multi-time All-Star. So consider that when you're willing to throw in Hero for a package for Bradley Beal or Donovan Mitchell or something like that. Not only that, but in the long term, Miami's also cleared some cap space, and they positioned themselves for a big future, which kind of makes the season feel almost like a placeholder, kind of reinforcing what I've already said, is that maybe you're not necessarily focused on this season and what you're accomplished there. Again, that's not to say that they can't accomplish. This is a title contending team, whether or not you believe it or not. Maybe that's just Miami homerism. Maybe that's just some unrealistic gauge of what this team is like, but they play defense at a high level. They've got all the personnel. They can shoot. They can score. They've got a superstar there. They have a lot of different things. They might not be as talented as a Toronto as far as high-end talent or things of that sort, but I think they can hold their own with the Raptors. I think they can certainly hold their own with the Bucks as well. So they are a very, very good team this year, but if you've done nothing else, you're able to position yourself in a place where you can acquire a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a Victor Oladipo or a Bradley Beal or somebody else like that. The only downside to this season, really, even if they wound up losing to the Pacers, is that potentially you gave up on Justice Winslow because you made the move to acquire Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder, which has paid immediate dividends for Miami. And while that's a win-now scenario, the reality is that waiting a potential has long been a double-edged sword in the NBA. It's ended many careers. And given what Justice has experienced as an injured player, an oft-injured player, a guy who hasn't really reached anywhere near the kind of potential that most people associated with him coming out of Duke University, you wonder whether or not he'll ever live up to those expectations. And that might be an unfair amount of pressure for him. But Miami is looking to a bright future, and it just does not include a young player like Winslow, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, I think they've still been very, very good, and it's been a great season. It's been a lot of fun to watch. Speaking of watching, the schedule for the playoffs has been released. The first game against Indiana is Tuesday, August 18th at 4 p.m. Then the following game, 2 days later, August 20th at 1. Then Saturday, August 22nd at 3:30 p.m. before you finally get an evening game televised on Monday, August 24th at 6:30 p.m. The games have obviously been every other day. There's no traveling in between, so this is great. The times might be inconvenient. I see some people complaining about these early tip-offs, but listen, they're very, very necessary. I think the NBA has done a hell of a job at trying to schedule so much and trying to make this as convenient as possible. And hopefully some of you are at home and not forced to work remotely at this point in time. You'd hate to have to be able to travel during the pandemic and everything that's impacting our society to such an extreme. So if hopefully you can stay home or you can watch these games on Fox Sports, because I think they'll all be televised there. At least that's my understanding. I did want to talk a little bit about Kendrick Dunn, because he struggled against the Indiana Pacers on Friday. And again, while that game didn't mean much, it was his first return to the rotation after having left the Orlando bubble. He had to go through quarantine again, and he just has not looked very comfortable in his role. And I don't see what his role is. I think if Goran is going to be starting, and I think that seems likely, and Tyler is your primary ball handler off the bench, I don't know where that leaves Kendrick Nunn. Is he a guy who's going to play a couple minutes from the guard position? He's not big enough to defend taller wings. He's not really good enough to defend quicker guards either. He just doesn't stay in front, goes under screens far too often. We saw that during the games in which he played earlier on in the bubble and the scrimmage before that. It's just, I'm not sure what to expect of him. And I know that mayhap I've been a little critical of Kendrick earlier in the season for off-the-court reasons, but also because I just didn't see what his long-term potential was. And I think we're kind of starting to see that. Like, as many high-scoring games as he's had when he was not part of the scouting report, or when a lot of guys didn't know what to expect, the reality is that if Kendrick's shot isn't falling, and that's happened far too often during the Orlando bubble, I just don't know that he's making an impact. He's not a playmaker. He's not a good defender. And if that's the case, I'm not sure what you're getting out of Kendrick Nunn. And so I wouldn't expect him to get a lot of playing time either. I think Derrick Jones is out of the rotation for the most part. His best asset is being able to defend ball handlers on the perimeter, or a guy that can be playing a couple minutes in the zone defense if necessary. And Kendrick is not a good defender. And so, you know, with Tyler scoring so comfortably, with Kelly Olynyk being a guy who stretches the floor as well as he has, with Andre Iguodala doing so much as a versatile playmaker, I think that's your top eight. Aside from the starters that we already have, Myers seems out. Maybe you'll get a couple of minutes for Derek. Maybe you'll get a couple of minutes for Kendrick. But again, you're already starting to go 10 deep. And that doesn't seem very likely that Eric Spoelstra is going to want to go with such a deep rotation. So I have concerns about Kendrick Nunn. I'd like for him to have a big game where he bounces back. But again, it seems pretty unlikely. And I just don't know what happens. I don't know if Eric Spoelstra has reached a point where he wants to make or feels comfortable making the hard decision as far as not starting guys. Again, benching Myers was a real wake-up call for everybody on that team. I think there's been several over the course of the regular season, from, you know, benching Deion Waiters to suspending Waiters and James Johnson, and, you know, all the other things that he's done during the regular season. And Spo has been very, very hard, and he wants to understand. I think he's more aware now than ever of trying to maximize a star player's window, because those things close very quickly. And he probably regrets not making the most of that opportunity for Dwayne during Eric's first years as a head coach, and especially towards the tail end of his career when they couldn't even get into the playoffs. And so he won't make that mistake again. If there's been any kind of final point where Spoel just says, you know what, enough is enough, I think this is where it is. Or last season, it was, again, a hard wake-up call for him to realize that maybe his star player or one of his favorite players of all time, and Dwayne, couldn't at least go out on the note of reaching the postseason one final time. So he does not want to do that to Jimmy, who I think he's grown very close to, because he's so much embodies Miami Heat culture and is so similar to Dwayne as far as a leadership standpoint and accountability and everything else in that locker room. So he might not be the coziest, friendliest, warmest guy, but if you need somebody out there to get things done and to get the most out of the players he's with, Jimmy Butler is your guy. So, but coming up later this week, I'll continue to preview the playoff series against the Indiana Pacers. Again, I'll be talking to different media members from around the league. And I'll, of course, my episode with Duncan Robinson straight from the Orlando bubble. Make sure that you download that and be on the lookout for that when it comes out in a few days. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast. That's the easiest way to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.